When Stephen Sondheim needs someone to orchestrate a musical score, he usually turns to Jonathan Tunick. Tunick has worked on Sweeney Todd, Pacific Overtures, A Little Night Music, Follies, and the current Broadway hit Into the Woods. Stephen Holden in the New York Times described Tunick as the most sought-after orchestrator on Broadway. For Sweeney Todd, Tunick evoked the madness of obsessive revenge. And for Into the Woods, Tunick chose the instruments that put rhythm into the steps of the fairy tale characters as they began their journey.
Into the woods without delay, but careful not to lose the way. Into the woods, who knows what may be lurking on the journey. Into the woods to get the thing that makes it worth the journey. Into the woods
to see the key,
to sell the cow,
to make the potion,
to see, to sell, to get, to bring, to make.
Is it hard to tell where composing ends and orchestrating begins?
Well, as Rimsky-Korsakov said, orchestration is composition. And it's true in the sense that orchestration is one of the composer's tools. The orchestrator's job is to take up where the composer has left off, wherever that might be, and finish the music.
Let's look at Into the Woods as an example. Did Stephen Sondheim, the composer, describe a kind of overall idea of what he wanted before he actually gave you the score?
Well, I found the best way to deal with a musical is to approach it in theatrical terms. This is true of film music too, in dealing with film directors. It's better to stay away from technical discussions and make the discussions aesthetic ones.
So what kind of aesthetic ideas did you talk about before getting to work?
Now you're trying to pin me down. I have to confess that with the experience, all the experience that I've had doing shows, I don't talk about it that much anymore. Just give it a quick listen and have a look at it at rehearsal, and I pretty much know what to do.
There's a song in Into the Woods called Agony,
mm-hmm.
and it's sung by two princes, who's in love with Cinderella and one who's in love with Rapunzel. And it's a beautiful melody, and it's a really yearning kind of song.
They're not exactly in love with him. They just want to get them.
They want to get them, right. But in the show, it's kind of sung for laughs. It's very self-dramatizing, and the princes are doing this kind of one-upsmanship about who's really in more agony over their woman. Now, you have a kind of nice string quartet chamber kind of sound behind it. Can you talk about why you chose those instruments and why you chose that kind of setting for this song?
So how can I answer this question? As you were asking me the question, I was thinking of the two princes up on the stage and how it reminds me of vaudeville and it's like two Jewish comics doing a one-upsmanship routine, or Abbott and Costello. It's a comedy song, and one of the reasons it's funny is it's couched in these melodramatic or super romantic terms. That's one of the reasons it's funny. It goes against type.
Exactly, and then behind it, you have this very refined chamber-like music for something that you've described as reminding you of a vaudeville scene. I mean, I love that kind of contrast. I think it really works.
Well, it's the exact opposite of what the meat of the number is.
High in her tower, she sits by the hour, maintaining her hair. Blithe and becoming, and frequently humming a light-hearted air. She would go with you if there only were doors. Agony, all the torture they teach. What's as intriguing or half so fatiguing as what's out of reach? Am I not sensitive?
You've had a long collaboration with Stephen Sondheim. How did you first start working together?
Well, it's not a collaboration. It's really an employment.
Uh-huh. That's an interesting distinction, yeah.
A collaboration is... Rodgers and Hammerstein is a collaboration. They ran a business together, and they split the money.
Right.
That's a collaboration.
So you're a kind of gun for hire, the way you see it, when you're an orchestrator.
I like to think of it as a profession, that a composer would hire an orchestrator, and the way you would hire a dentist, or... You know, you hire a dentist to fix your teeth because he knows something that you don't know. As a matter of fact, I've veered away from orchestrating for other people. I've done very little of it, actually, in the last 10 years. In a way, I've felt I had said pretty much all I had to say as a Broadway orchestrator. And I enjoy writing film music and television music.
Do you think you've, in a way, though, become better known for your orchestrations than for your
obviously, compositions? Obviously, that's what people want to interview me about. So,
and it drives you crazy, right?
Well, it's okay, actually. I've had a wonderful time working on Broadway. It's great, you know. You put your name on a poster, and you go and hang around backstage, and you're in show business, and it's exciting.
Now, I'm going to confess that I really am more familiar with you as an orchestrator than as a composer. So perhaps you can fill me in on some of the scores that you've composed.
I've done a great deal of work for PBS. Any number of television films. I was a composer on Columbo. That was my first job as a composer.
Oh, really?
And I've just finished the pilot for a new series called Tattingers that's going to be on NBC.
When you are composing, do you do your own orchestration or do you ship that out to somebody else?
Well, it's an intriguing question. I have, when time demanded... called in help and orchestration. This last project I orchestrated myself. You see, my whole approach to music is not to think of orchestration as a process that happens to music after it's written.
You hear the whole thing in your mind with the different instruments.
Now, I understand that most composers don't think that way. They seem to write their music for the piano and then subject it to this process called orchestration, whereby it's changed from one thing into another. I don't write music that way. As a matter of fact, when I write something and I have to play it for somebody on the piano, I have to then go over to the piano and learn how to play it. And practice it, which I find an agonizing ordeal because, in my conception, it already exists. It exists on paper, and it's already pretty much in its completely developed form. Now I have to change it into piano music and worse, learn to play it, and I don't play that well.
There's a new album of Cleo Lane singing Stephen Sondheim songs, and you orchestrated that record for her.
Well, the other thing I always wanted to be was an arranger like Nelson Riddle. See, these are the things I wanted to be when I was a kid. I wanted to be a band leader like Stan Kenton and have an enormous jazz band and stand in front of it and lead it and write for it. I wanted to be a studio arranger conductor like Nelson Riddle or Robert Farnon. See, I was born too late for all these things. And I wanted to be a wonderful movie composer like Max Steiner.
Uh-huh. So this is your Nelson Riddle homage.
Yes.
The sun comes up. I think about you. The coffee cup. I think. I want you so, it's like I'm losing my mind. The morning ends, I think about you. I talk to friends, I think about you.
Cleo Lane singing Losing My Mind from the new album Cleo Sings Sondheim, orchestrated and conducted by Jonathan Tunick. This is Fresh Air.